The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Let me start by saying that, as you might well know, the ancient British universities were based around a grammar school education. And to a large extent, a lot of what we continue to do, you can probably tell from my lack of accent that I come from the US, I'm not British. Do I? Very interesting, yes. I mean, I've lived there 4 years, so perhaps it's starting to come through. I've been fascinated to sort of compare and contrast the education I got from the U.S. and from U.S. universities, and then being in a British system.
Where'd you go?
So I went to Grove City College for my bachelor's degree and studied history and philosophy. Then I went on to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and did a Master of Divinity. And then I did a PhD at Duke University. And now I teach New Testament at the University of St. Andrews in our Divinity School, which is its own college called St. Mary's College. So that's my history. And please, since we're such a small group, I'm quite happy to take questions as we go.
Are you involved for the Divinity School and the University?
So it's a great question. The Divinity School is its own college, which is part of the university. So it's not quite as independent as, say, Oxford or Cambridge colleges would be, Oxford in particular. But we do still maintain a high level of independence in the larger university context. Is that right? At St. Andrews? Yeah. And did she like it? Okay. I hope the answer is yes. Well, one of the key differences that we get, and what I might do actually is just pull up my presentation for myself so I make sure that I'm talking about...
All right.
Wonderful.
Is it on there?
It is on here, yes. So I'll have to log in.
So we're going to try to pull it off of there.
Superb.
Yeah, I think that... Maybe this, it's a fancy one, but.
Yeah. So.
Maybe it's too fancy for this one.
That could be, I don't know.
Just joking.
Your future's so bright here.
They sent an academic, you know? I don't know how to do this stuff. Okay, so let me pull up the presentation.
Okay, just showing you where it is.
It's in. Sorry, it's buried.
The Force Awakens. Why is there a Star Wars DVD in this laptop?
Come on. There we go. I think someone was using it.
I don't know.
Okay, this is a presentation. Okay, sorry, as I was saying, the ancient British universities were based on a grammar school model. And much of what we continue to do at a place like the University of St. Andrews is basically dependent on having a grammar school background. But fewer and fewer of our students, even in the UK, are actually trained to do that kind of, to have that kind of foundation. In my view, as somebody who is committed to a liberal arts education, this is a problem. And it's a problem because we are highly focused in the bachelor, well, actually, the undergraduate master's programs. When you graduate from St. Andrews, in the liberal arts at least, you will be required to write a research thesis in your final year, and that will be supervised one-on-one by one of the faculty in the area that you're writing your thesis on. And all of the faculty are research active. They are all publishing. They are all people who, if you know that field, will have made some sort of contribution. So because they write this research thesis, which is 10 to 12,000 words in length, it is intended to work you through the process of doing independent research, and effectively is like producing a little scholarly article. That's really what it is. Students who come into that sort of an approach need to already have a good foundation in the liberal arts. And we assume that, but fewer and fewer of our students actually have that. That's one of the reasons that we're here. We're here because we would love to see the best and the brightest coming out of a classical Christian education who have Latin, who know how languages work, for example, so that we can take them right into Greek if they haven't had Greek already. And my third and fourth year students, yes? Yeah, either one will work. What we teach is Koine because we're reading the New Testament. But an Attic foundation would be superb. You can more easily go from Attic to Koine than the other way around, just because of the way the language develops.
You're right.
All right, thank you so much. I really appreciate your help. Okay, it looks like we're in business now. Okay. I titled this little presentation Further Up and Further In, with an intentional allusion, of course, to C.S. Lewis and The Last Battle. And the reason I chose that allusion is because of what I was just saying. Our education will take students deeper into a subject than a typical bachelor's program will do in the U.S., but that presupposes that the foundation is already there. And thus our problem, but also we think some hope from what's going on in this approach to classical education. So why the UK? I've presented this as more something much bigger than just St. Andrews, though I will end by focusing on St. Andrews. The UK has a lot to offer. As I've already said, these ancient universities are based on a grammar school model. But the UK programs also, some of them, are world-leading institutions. Everyone will have heard of Oxford and Cambridge. More and more people are hearing about St. Andrews. We're right up there with Oxford and Cambridge. In fact, our admission standards are second only to the Oxbridge schools. So there are multiple universities in the UK which are ranked within the top 100 of all the universities in the world. And that's something that is needs to be taken seriously. There's value, I believe, having lived internationally. I spent some time in Germany. I've also spent some time in the UK now. There is value in an international and cross-cultural experience. Now, there's a lot of talk in contemporary undergraduate education about come and get an experience. We're not about an experience. We're about an education. And the way that plays out is that many of the things that top undergraduate programs in the U.S. will require from their students, for example, some sort of almost CV that lists all of the extracurricular activities, we don't care. What we want to see is the academic work you've done, what kind of grades you've gotten, and how you're doing on some of the standardized tests. I wish that weren't a piece of how we assessed, but it's just the reality. So we're not interested in making sure that your students have gone out and done every single service project available. We would rather that your students are sitting down learning their Latin, learning their classical history, doing the academic work. Not that there's anything wrong with service, but this is where we focus. So there's the opportunity to come and have a cross-cultural experience, but I don't want you to hear that in the same language as what you'll get from a lot of other colleges. This cross-cultural experience is based on the fact that we are in Scotland or in the UK. And the building that I teach in was built in 1538. And it's just hard to recreate that with a climbing wall or whatever, you know, a great student union. We offer something that no American university.
That's like a new college
would start. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. We're very honored to have somebody name themselves after us. There's also...
I mean, New College Edinburgh.
Oh, New College Edinburgh,
we're
yeah.
Edinburgh, we're on the bus, and the bus driver goes,
yes.
Well, this is
the new college.
This is our new college, yeah. And it was started...
In the 19th century, yeah, I know, exactly. It's wonderful, isn't it? And that takes me to the next point. There is a rich history in the UK. These universities have their own stories. St. Andrews is the third oldest English-speaking university in the world. Founded in 1413, we've been around for a while. We're in our 7th century now. The only ones older for the English-speaking world are Oxford and then Cambridge. There's also tremendous natural beauty in the UK. If you've ever had the chance to visit Scotland in particular, it is a stunningly beautiful country. And students have the opportunity to travel throughout Scotland. They also have the opportunity to travel on the continent. It's much easier to get to Europe when you're already mostly there. And I say this, I'll qualify this and talk about it a bit more. But the tuition rates are actually competitive when you look at institutions in the U.S. that would offer the same level of research quality education. That is to say, if you look at a major institution, I did my doctoral work at Duke, the faculty at Duke are actively researching. They have to be. They're actively publishing, actively contributing to their field. The tuition at Duke will run you some tuition. Will run you somewhere close to $50,000 now. At St. Andrews, we do exactly the same thing. The faculty are actively publishing, actively researching, actively contributing to their field. And our tuition with the current exchange rate is $26,000. So it's obviously not cheap, but it is a competitive cost compared to sort of equivalent institutions in the U.S. As I said, we're such a small group that please feel free to just ask questions, and I'm happy to. Yeah, so room and board, if you were to get room and board from the college, it's probably going to run you about $8,000 to $9,000. Now, you're also welcome, though, to go outside the college and look. This is just St. Andrews, of course. I can't speak about the tuition at Oxford. Yes. Yeah. Yes, right.
And I think the idea is that the British university students don't pay the kind of tuition. In other words, they kind of like getting American students because they actually pay a higher tuition.
Yes, there's no question about that. So I don't mean to be too cynical. We're not just here because of the money. But there's no question about it that international students are an important part of providing us with the funding that the schools need. And that's only going to become more important as Brexit continues to develop. 25% of the funding that St. Andrews receives comes from the European Union. It's not over yet, and we're still praying. Some of us, at least, are still praying. It's hard to see where that's going to go, and that's created a great deal of instability, which has made the pound plummet and made it much more affordable for Americans to come over. So can I put a nice spin on that? But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is important for us to be reaching out internationally because that's an important source of funding. But it's important for us to be reaching out internationally because international students bring something special to us, and we think we have something that's special to offer to them as well.
What percentage of the undergraduates are
here? The current percentage that I've heard, the data might be 2 years or so old because we're always lagging a bit behind, was 16%. 16% of our total undergraduate population was American. Yep, total outside of Britain, including the EU, is currently running at 41%. No, maybe it's 40. Yeah, somewhere around 40, 45%, somewhere in between there. So St. Andrews is actually a very multicultural, very international place. When I walk down the streets, and there aren't many of them, it's very common to hear Chinese, German, French, American accents, as we do stand out. It's a diverse place. So I did want to talk about some pros and cons, because there are some cons, and I don't think there's any point not being upfront about that. The pros, some of the things that I've just talked about, I view as real pros for why a British education is something to consider. Another real pro, and I would hope that this is something that would be attractive to the kind of students you're educating, is that there is a heavy emphasis on in our programs on independent research and independent learning. What does that look like? Well, having gone through an American college education, I would have received a syllabus, and it would have broken out for me in crystal clarity exactly which pages I need to read, exactly when. I knew every class I went to, I knew exactly what I had to do. There was some significant hand-holding that was going on. Now, as somebody who's been trained that way, I've brought some of that into my syllabi when I teach at St. Andrews. However, not everyone will do that, number one. And number two, I'm not doing that nearly to the same degree that I would have done if I were teaching at an American college. You're given a book list, and you're expected to read these books, actually. and you're expected to come to class and actually be able to talk about the content of the arguments. So what we're hoping to do is not lead students quite as much by the hand, but actually allow them to explore what's interesting to them within a framework of some basic texts. And we are hopeful, I say that intentionally, that students will be reading beyond what's just given on that. So there's also sort of recommended readings or additional readings. And the students who do the best are the ones who are going beyond just the reading, the books that are assigned, as it were, to the class. In addition to that, I already mentioned that we require our students in the fourth year. That's something, by the way, that sets us apart. Scottish universities, you may know this, continue to require 4 years of education. Most English universities have dropped to 3, which I suppose in a way makes them more affordable. But one of the things that they've missed out, is the opportunity to do that independent research project at the end in your fourth year. So this is one reason that in St. Andrews, you will, apart from some of the sciences, you will graduate with an undergraduate master's degree, not an undergraduate bachelor's degree. And it's because of that independent research component that we continue to require. So there's that independent sense, that focus on independent research that you get to have in a British education. So we don't have the breadth that a Bachelor of Arts might have. We'll come back to that point. Along with that independent research, though, comes an ability to really focus and to go into depth into the subject that you're studying. So another reason why we feel okay offering a master's degree at the end of this process. Let me just sort of put this in real terms. Most of the teaching I had done in the U.S. had been at a master's level in a seminary context prior to going to St. Andrews. The teaching that I'm doing with undergraduates at St. Andrews in the third and fourth year, which is their primary subject years, is oftentimes at the same level, if not higher, than the teaching I was doing with American Master of Divinity students. Specifically, to give it a clear example, our students, if they want to select New Testament, which is what I teach, have the ability to do Greek exegesis courses in their third and fourth years of undergraduate. So we sit down with the book of Hebrews, and we read through it in Greek. There aren't many American undergraduate places where you could do that. Most people will have to, if they want that, go on to seminary or something like that. And even not all seminaries even have that opportunity anymore. Seminaries are more and more requiring less and less in terms of language training. So there really is an ability to go in depth with a British education, especially what we have at St. Andrews, precisely because we expect that a lot of that breadth has already been covered.
So is there a little larger general ed core?
No.
And that's, I think, one of the things that you might view as a con. And I want to say, this is not a good fit for every student, full stop. It just isn't. So those of you who are maybe counseling your students, really, don't just, I'm sure you wouldn't, but it's not just like, oh, Britain, wow, it's these ancient universities. It's not for every student. First of all, as you may have already guessed, there's a lot less guidance and hand-holding that's going on. When we have students who come over for a junior year abroad or a semester abroad, the American students really find themselves stepping through a looking glass and saying, like, wait, what's going on? I have to know that? You didn't tell me I had to know that. Like, well, yeah, that's true. We didn't. We just expected you to take some responsibility and read what was there, even though we didn't tell you what pages and what day and whatnot. So this is not for every student. This is for the student who really has a sense of what it is they want to work on and a sense of where they want to go in depth. I do think, then, that is a con. Not a good fit for every student. We do not have common, at least it's not common to find core courses. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't any room to take courses outside your area of specialization. We'll come back to this a bit later when we talk about St. Andrews more specifically. There are some opportunities to get some breadth, but this is precisely what I meant when I said earlier that this system is built on the grammar school model. This is not a remedial system. Now, I was the kind of student, I had a decent enough education at a decent enough Christian school growing up. I'm very grateful for it. But I needed core liberal arts courses because my Christian school didn't really give me that. I don't think I would have thrived at a place like St. Andrews. I needed some remedial sort of work. But for students who have that background and don't need that remedial kind of work, this, I think, can be an attractive option. But it's not for everyone. And they don't send someone to St. Andrews assuming, oh, you're going to get this lovely liberal arts education. You won't get that breadth, but you will get depth. We don't typically have as many scholarship opportunities, and that's just a function of the funding model. Our funding is partly linked with government funding, which allows us to offer, because we're sort of subsidized, we can be competitive in terms of our tuition costs. And I mentioned that earlier, that we have relatively competitive tuition costs. But the flip side of that is British universities typically aren't working with big endowments. They don't have a lot of cash on hand that they can throw around for scholarships. So that does mean that the price tag is probably what you'll end up paying. So it's just something to be aware of. I'm not saying there are no scholarship opportunities. There are some, but it's far more limited in the UK than it would be at many U.S. universities, where potentially, again, this is maybe a bit cynical, but potentially you have a marked up cost, and then they know they can maybe, that's exactly right. So we're still trying to catch up on how to play these games. I say that cynically, yeah. There's also the issue of distance. I mean, let's face it, you're sending your kids off to the UK, and if you're already paying a good amount in terms of tuition, it may be difficult to see them at Christmas. It's not impossible, but you got to pay for the plane tickets, or so somebody is going to have to fly over. But these are things that have to be considered, I think, as one weighs up whether or not this is the sort of education that might be attractive to a given student. Now, I do want to shift gears a bit from UK in general to Scotland, and then we'll narrow down even more to St. Andrews. In Scotland, there are four ancient universities. These are universities that date before 1582. These universities are the University of St. Andrews, the University of Glasgow, the University of Edinburgh, and the University of Aberdeen. I assume that these are names that probably everybody has heard, because these are world-leading universities that have been around for hundreds of years. Among these universities, St. Andrews is very proud to be the oldest. Not that oldest is always best, but it really is a badge of honor for us. The history, in sort of a rough and ready story, is that students from Scotland were having to go to Paris, by and large, to get trained for Catholic ministry back in the 1400s. That's the only thing going. And there was a split in the papacy at this point in time. And the question was, we don't really want to go to Paris anymore, but what can be on offer for us here in Scotland? So Pope Benedict XIII, who was one of the popes who was vying for power, said, I will begin a university in Scotland so that Scottish students don't have to go to Paris and then potentially find themselves supporting the other pope. There were politics involved. But as a result of that, and we still have it, we have a papal bull from 1413 giving the University of St. Andrews the right to exist and the right to train students. Now, as I've said already, I represent in particular the Divinity School, which is St. Mary's College. St. Mary's College was founded in 1538, and this was in response to the Reformation. The Catholic Church founded St. Mary's as a way of competing with what was going on the continent, by and large, in terms of the Reformation. However, within 30 years or so, St. Mary's College itself tilted in favor of the Reformation. And one of our most famous graduates is John Knox, who was really a flashpoint for the Scottish Reformation. It's as part of the history of the town. You can walk through the town, and there are markers identifying where people like Patrick Hamilton and George Wishart were executed by the Catholic Church in the town of St. Andrews, burnt at the stake. So there's an immense amount of religious history, as well as other history, here in the town of St. Andrews. But in spite of its efforts to offer a more attractive form of Catholicism through training folks at St. Mary's became a real focal point of the Scottish Reformation shortly after it was founded. Now, why then St. Andrews? So this is where I'm really here to pitch St. Andrews. Academic excellence is right at the top of our list. As I said earlier, it's not that we have any problem with students doing service activities or extracurriculars. That's wonderful. But we really want to know, are they going to be able to cut it academically? We're not offering an experience. We're offering an education. That's what we do. As such, St. Andrews will not have a lot of the bells and whistles that, you know, a modern U.S. college will come along and throw at you. But we do think we can offer a superb education. Our graduates, over 90% of our graduates, are going into either a workplace job or going into further academic work. So we've been fairly successful at that side of things. Moreover, and this is something we're very proud about, we have a 97% graduation rate. There are not many schools in the world that can compete with that level of successfully moving students through our program to graduation. I think there are reasons for that. We're not a huge university. We are a very old university, but our total student enrollment is between 8,000 and 9,000 students. That's undergraduate and master's and PhD. Now, of those numbers, about 6,000 or so are undergraduate. So the real focus of what we're doing is undergraduate education. But when you start to break it down and you get into particular schools, I'm jumping ahead a bit, we'll come back to this point, but in St. Mary's in particular, you have a very low student-to-faculty ratio. So there are times when I'm teaching seminar courses where we might only have five or six sitting around a table grappling with the Greek of Hebrews or Matthew or whatever. So I think that's a key to our success in moving students to graduation. They get much more, especially in the humanities, much more personal attention than many big universities would. In divinity, we do not rely on postgraduate students to do our teaching. The faculty do all the teaching. There are a few places where postgraduate students can come in and help, but when N.T. Wright is on the bill to do the New Testament course, N.T. Wright is lecturing, and he and I actually share that course. So he lectures on Paul, and we have two N.T. intro courses, one on Gospels and Jesus, and then one on Paul and everything else. Tom Wright lectures on Paul. It's not one of Tom Wright's students. It's not even me. It's him. When it comes to Acts and everything else, I'm the one lecturing, not a graduate student. That's something we're very proud of. And you can't get that at many of the leading research universities in the U.S. Research-led teaching, this is something that we are also very proud of. I can speak for myself here, that there is a dynamic vitality that you bring to the classroom when you just hit on an idea. And you want to actually bounce it off other smart people and see what they think. We don't sacrifice actual basic core knowledge. So for the first 2 years of a student's education, they're getting basic core knowledge to a discipline. They're not getting, you know, research-led teaching in that sense. But when it comes time for them to move into the seminars, if we're doing reading the book of Hebrews, which is my area of specialization in Greek, we're going to be reading it through in Greek. But if I have an idea on a verse, we're going to stop and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to bounce it around and see. And that may well end up in print in a future point. Or they might save me from putting it into print. That's just a special relationship that is treating these students as if they're colleagues. And really, that's how we view them, colleagues in training. Not all of them will go on and become professional colleagues in New Testament. We get that. But we're treating them with a level of responsibility and respect that you're not going to get in a typical lecture-style classroom in every university in the U.S. Also, it's important to point out that the University of St. Andrews for the past decade has consistently ranked in the top 100. We are in the top 1% of all universities in the world in various rankings that are done. We take these rankings with a grain of salt, but we're not going to shy away from, you know, tooting our own horn a bit when it comes to the fact that people outside the university comparing us to other universities are consistently saying that what we offer is at a very high standard. When we focus on the UK, things get even rosier. We are first in Scotland. There is no other university in Scotland which is consistently ranked as highly as St. Andrews is at the moment. We are third in the UK, second only to Oxford and Cambridge. Third only to Oxford and Cambridge. And this is something that we've gotten from various organizations that do these sorts of rankings. When we look at the Divinity School, again, where I teach, there's something that all UK universities are required to do. It is a student assessment. At the end of their program, every student basically gets to say, here's what was good about the program, here's what was bad. You know, say what you will about student assessment, it is something that is an important measure of at least what a student senses they're getting from their education. And we consistently come in first in the entire country in Divinity. Moreover, in world rankings, we're coming in the top 20. So that's the sort of level of academic excellence that we focus on. When I think about why a place like St. Andrews, the primary reason is the education. That's really what it's about if you're looking at this. We don't offer a lot of extracurriculars. Although there's a very robust student life in the town, that's not what we're doing as a university. What we're doing as a university is providing what we can say others recognize as a first-rate, world-class education. Now, you may have noticed that I've been intentional, because we are intentional at St. Andrews, in using the language of divinity. St. Andrews is almost unique in the British scene. Virtually these medieval faculties were all originally, divinity was a key aspect, Christian divinity. Almost every other university, including Oxford and Cambridge, have shifted from divinity programs to religion departments. We have continued to fight against that pressure. It is there. There is pressure to do that, no question about it. There's a general sense that we would be more attractive to more students if we offered Islam as one of our areas of study, or Eastern religions. That's not us. That's not who we are at St. Andrews. We continue to teach Christian divinity. Now, we are not a seminary. And this has to be very clear. We're not pushing any particular denominational line. And there is no requirement for any of the faculty who are hired to even be confessional. St. Andrews is a secular university. But because St. Andrews has, again, almost uniquely in the UK, there are one or two other programs that are still doing this in the major universities. Because we have continued to make our identity as Christian divinity a core of who we are, we tend to attract people who do, in fact, have confessional commitments. So I want to be clear about this. If you send a student to St. Andrews, they're not going to a Christian university. They're going to a secular university, and I mean, even more so outside of divinity. But in divinity, at least, almost all the faculty, nobody's going to be out to get somebody for their faith. Almost all the faculty are going to actually be teaching from a perspective of, we take this seriously. In the classroom, I can't do what I could do at a seminary. When I taught at a seminary, it was very easy to blur the line between a lecture and a sermon, and I loved it. I can't do that at St. Andrews. But what I can do is teach in a way that I think is faithful to what we actually see in the details of the text, and make claims from the text, because it's there. That is the object that we're studying. We're not there to study a theory about the text. We're not there to try to understand communities behind the text. We're there to say, what is this text saying? And in addition to that, there's a great deal of flexibility when a student wants to come and talk one-on-one. And that's where the pastoral side, for me, continues to be very rich. Because education isn't safe. We're not interested in a safe space at St. Andrews. We're interested in actually trying to learn what's the history as best we can know it. So there's lots of opportunity to sit down one-on-one with students when they do have questions, when it actually does come directly to bear on their faith. And I don't personally take that lightly. In fact, I take it as part of the vocation of doing this kind of teaching in this kind of institution. But it has to be out there up front. I'm not interested in making St. Andrews look like, oh, you come here and your students are going to be in this wonderful Christian environment. No. The UK is post-Christian. If you think the US is post-Christian, go to the UK. It's a very different environment. And honestly, for me, this is a bit missional. I would love to see more better educated Christian undergraduates making a difference in Scotland for the time that they're there. Okay, so a bit about the... Yes, please. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a great question. There are some students who are doing that. We have a few ordinand track students. They largely go into the Scottish Episcopal Church. We have probably about, in the 4 years I've been there, probably about half at least of every class have been people of faith who are there because they want to learn more about the Bible, because they love God and they love Jesus and they want to know more about their faith. So there's a very vital, in our small school, a very vital component of people who are doing it because they believe. But then there are others. We have Muslim students, we have Jewish students, we have atheists who simply want to know what's going on over here. And they can get a St. Andrews degree, and they can study something that they're interested in. And we sometimes have fantastic conversations in the midst of a classroom discussion where a very different perspective is brought to bear. Everybody has to sort of sit and wrestle with this. That's the not safe space about it. Nobody's intentional, I think, about trying to offend anyone. But people are there because they have beliefs or they have questions. And real conversations happen in that sort of a context. I was hoping to show you a video on St. Mary's, but unfortunately the computer that they've lent me doesn't have internet access. So because of my inability to connect my computer, we can't watch that. But I will give you the address if you want to see it. And one of the things you'll see in that video is one of our students who's interviewed, who says, we have weekly college worship. We still maintain weekly college worship in a 12th century chapel. And it's a mixed bag. It draws on faculty to do some of the preaching and worship, and it draws on different ministers throughout the town, and different students will come for different reasons. So it's not a seminary. It's not a Christian school in the way that we might from an evangelical background think of. But it is a place that's not unfriendly to deeply held faith commitments and where the students are talking with each other, not only in the classroom, but outside as well, and talking about why are you studying this? So, again, just to put that up front and center.
What about the rest of the university?
Yeah. It's going to be a very modern secular university. You get great education, but there's not going to be any sense of trying to do...
Again, not unfriendly to...
I think, it's hard to say because I don't actually live in that context. I mean, I have contact with other faculty. I don't think anybody would be intentionally unfriendly, although there might be courses like biology, for example, where students might find a bit more friction. There are, however, some folks in the town, leading scientists, who are Christians. And in fact, the Templeton Foundation has supported for a number of years a series of lectures that are held every so often, I think every month at least, where people come in as scientists and talk about what it means to be a Christian scientist. So there would be some support, but a student would have to seek it out. It's not going to be there. That's right, yeah. I think that would be the right way to think about it. Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So in terms of the four schools that are there,
yes.
What are some of the top majors and what are some SAT scores that y'all
are... Yes, excellent. Thank you for that question. In the back, I brought a little bit of literature, which will actually clearly lay out what we require. The new SAT, I don't know if anybody's even doing the old one anymore, but I think in that literature we say 1320, I think probably 1350 is more where a student would want to be, and then they would be required to score highly on the essay as well. And then if they have any prerequisites that they need and they need to do subject SATs, I think 700 is about the bar. So we take it seriously. And students will have to do well to demonstrate, along with very high grades, along with a really good recommendation from one of the faculty who have taught them. And the kind of things we're looking for aren't extracurriculars, this is a nice person. We're looking for how do they perform academically. If you find yourself writing a reference for a student or advising someone about that, we want to know about their work ethic, how they're performing academically, what is their sort of natural curiosity, that sort of thing is what we would want to see. So
Yes. Are you required to take a subject SAT in your planned major? Is that the idea?
It depends on each particular school. So you'd have to actually be in contact with the university at that point. I don't think in Divinity that would apply.
There's no subject
SAT for that. So that wouldn't be an issue, but some of the schools would. In terms of some of our major programs, Divinity is actually now a very small part of the university. Although, I think we punch well above our weight. I think we typically are bringing in 25 to 35 undergraduates a year. So it's a tight community. And they typically get to know each other quite well. And it's a very diverse community, as I was saying earlier. We're often getting 3-4 U.S. students who are coming through. And then we get some who will do a junior year abroad and will come into our courses. Baylor has a really close connection with us, so we're getting Baylor students coming through periodically as well. Most of our students are coming from England. Probably 10% or so are coming from Scotland, and then we bring in EU students as well. So that's pretty much what a typical divinity class is going to look like. But you can already tell that although our standard student-to-faculty ratio is, staff-to-student ratio is 1 to 11, which is an outstanding ratio for a research university. In divinity, it's much smaller. I don't know the exact number, but you know we have a much smaller incoming class. Our big draws, as probably is not surprising given where our cultures are at, are in the sciences. Physics is a big program. Also, our international relations program is world class, one of the top programs. So they're often getting so many. You know, if you come to St. Andrews, everybody pretty much has to meet the same criteria to be admitted. But once you're in, you can swap majors just like any university. But with international relations, that's almost impossible, because they have so many students. The language that they'll use is they're oversubscribed. They have so many students that they don't have room to bring new students into that major. So if somebody wants to do IR, they should apply for IR. And recognize that it is a highly competitive program. But Divinity is highly competitive too. We're typically getting 70, 80 applications. So we're taking less than 50%. We don't fool around. You have to meet our standards if you're going to get into the university, and that includes divinity. So, arts, science, medicine, divinity, these are our basic faculties. Within those faculties, they break out into all the subdisciplines you would typically expect. Medicine is not a full, it's not a full medical school. It does basically the first part of the training, and then we team up with other universities to send students to finish off, just so that's clear. So this is the video I was going to show, but as I said, I don't have internet access on the computer that they've set up for me. You can Google us, and if you Google St. Mary's College, St. Andrews, you'll see that we have a promotional video which highlights some student, and we have some, it's not long, it's maybe, it's less than 4 minutes long. But it shows you the campus, the buildings, it shows you some of the faculty, some interviews with some faculty, and you get to hear some students talking about their experience of it as well. Student life in St. Andrews, everything I said about experience, that's a university perspective. When you actually look at life in the town, there's quite a bit going on for students. There are a number of student clubs. There's college athletics. They can get involved in crew. They can get involved in rugby. They can learn how to play cricket. I still can't figure out cricket. It's a complete mystery to me. One day, one of my students raised a hand and said, I'm about to throw in a googly. And I said, time out. I have no idea what a googly is. Apparently, it's a cricket pitch. So I learned something. Yeah, exactly. It'd be like a curveball, I think. Yeah, like a curveball. So I'm teaching them something too, because I'm constantly using American metaphors. You know, step up to the plate, and, you know, home run, and so we get to talk about that. But also football, or what we would call soccer, is very popular. The closest thing to American football is rugby, but there's track, field, all kinds of things that students can do. So there are lots of options. There's also the opportunity, as I said earlier, to travel and see some of the sites. And it's very easy to get to Edinburgh by train or bus. And Edinburgh is a lovely town, a big city. St. Andrews is not a big city. It's an ancient medieval city with three original roads. There's North Street, Market Street, and South Street. And that's St. Andrews. Now, there's stuff that's built up around it. But
how large is the town?
There are, I think, about, if I remember the numbers, about 30,000 residents in the town. So, you know, yeah, it's not bad.
Nice-sized college town.
That's right, exactly. Yep, that's right. And the college is going to contribute, you know, not quite what. So there are about 8,000 to 9,000 students that are coming in. So they're a very vital part of the college, of the town life.
Is the famous golf course in St. Andrews?
It is, yeah. The old course is right there in St. Andrews. Yeah. And, yeah, I don't golf. I really feel like I should. Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, but if you have students who are into golf, St. Andrews is a great place because students get lots of perks in terms of special tee times. And, yeah, you can't just get onto the old course, but students have some privileges there. So partly, I think, because of the setup difficulties, our time is coming quickly to an end. Let me just say that I'll give you a basic sense of what an undergraduate education looks like at St. Andrews. Your first 2 years are what we call sub-honors. This is where you're exploring. You know, it's not a major. Somebody was saying, I was talking to somebody earlier, that you can go do a degree where you major in exploration. Yeah, no, that's not St. Andrews. you can't do whatever you want. If you come into a particular subject, you are going to, in your first 2 years, be getting the basics of that subject. But we do require you to branch out and look at some other subjects as well. And many of our students will transition then between, among these subjects rather, in those first 2 years. By the time that you get to your second year, this so-called single honors, this is where we would use the language of majors. You're majoring in a topic. You still have to do, if you do joint honors, that would be like a double major. So really, in that single honors, that's where you're really going deep. That's where I'm dealing with students in Greek, for example, where some of my colleagues are reading Dead Sea Scrolls with students in Hebrew and Aramaic. I mean, there are some seminaries where you couldn't do that. So from the divinity perspective, that's what we would offer there. And the other subjects as well, you're digging in those last 2 years. Yeah.
Somebody goes to the joint honors track.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, sorry, there are some very, that's a great question. There are some permutations that I just wanted to zip through. No, they will select one to write a thesis in, typically. As with any place, there are ways to negotiate exceptions, but typically they'll write just one thesis.
You said subjects per year, but that means several courses within
that. That's right, exactly. I believe most of our students, I mean, it breaks down into credit hours, but that typically will track out as four courses each semester. Okay, now in terms of applying, probably the most helpful thing to know is about a direct application. The so-called UCAS is a UK system. If your students want to apply to multiple UK universities, they should look into this. All of this will be on our website, and there will be some more information in the literature. They sent an academic. Well, I volunteered for it, actually. But they didn't send a marketing person or an admissions person, so sorry about that. But yeah, the UCAS is an option that would save the most time and effort if you wanted to apply to multiple schools. We basically work with a kind of rolling admissions. So there's an incentive, if you really want to look at St. Andrews, to apply directly to us and to do it earlier rather than later. If a student is keen on St. Andrews or any of the other UK universities, there's nothing that will hurt them in terms of making contact early. For our best students, so the way that we'll work it is we'll have a reserve group, but our best students will usually sort of try to offer admission as soon as we can, in particular the postgraduate. I have a bit more experience with that personally. My understanding would be, though, that on the undergraduate, it would be a similar sort of thing. We will make offers as we feel a student is worthy of receiving that offer. I suppose that must be what that means. But this is one of these points. Like, I was reading up on this stuff, and some of it, I just didn't find the right information. Yeah, I assume that must be what it means. Yeah. But please don't hesitate to be in touch with the university itself, because they'll know how to work. And the brochure in the back will give you lots of information that is tailored to international and U.S. students in particular. I would be delighted to have further conversation right now with people who want to stay, but also if you want to just email me, you can Google my information. I have a few cards that are left at our table in the vendor area. Feel free to pick up one of my cards and get in touch with me. If I don't know the answer, I can put you in touch with the people that do. But thanks for your time. And yeah, we're excited about potentially branching out to get students who are trained the way we want them to be trained.
Yes, I did come after that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. So he was there at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, he told stories about William. Yeah, he knew about me. My students wanted to try to come for a year.
Yes, we do have exchange programs. And in fact, I didn't bring that book here, but there are some on the table. But you might want to look at that. If possible, the best way to do it is if they're either a university or a college that already has exchange programs. So they might want to. They might want to just put that in the mix when they're thinking about where to go to college, if they're particularly in the university they want to go to. Yeah. Yes, right. Yep. Yep. Well, look, it is not impossible for a small liberal arts college to get a lot of sense to make that. I've had conversations, I've talked to Campbell University for a little while, and I had conversations there.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Nice to have met you. Yeah. And her writer is just like this. The UK pronunciation,
which is frozen up all
the
time. Yeah. The, I wanted to do
that. I got that. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
It was like 60 degrees, sun was out, and we took the train. And so we got off at the station. We have a warehouse. It's a clock.